Welcome, ladies and gents. This is Charlie Tate. You're listening to my podcast, Tater Thoughts. And I am closing out Queen's 11th album today. If you've been following along with me, you know we talked about every single song on this album from 1984, The Works. And every time I close an album, I reveal the man, the queen, who stole my attention the most on the album in its entirety. That's not to say we're trashing the other performances from the other three. This is simply, who could I not stop paying attention to the most? Who was wowing me? Who were my ears constantly leaning toward? These are always fun. I like these. They're a little bittersweet, though, because I'm, of course, closing out another chapter in Queen world. And I still can't believe this is album 11. We're closing it out today. But before I reveal to you my pick, I have to give you a little bit of background on something I came across just last week. Pretty incredible, the timing. And it couldn't have happened at a better moment because this decision, who stole my attention the most on The Works, a lot different than I anticipated and tougher than I anticipated. But let me give you this information first. Last week, I was perusing YouTube again. And I came across an interview Rick Beato did with an artist and musician. And if you're not familiar with Rick Beato, shame on you. If you're a music fanatic in any form, I urge you to go watch his channel. This man has been playing for years. He is, by my account, an absolute music theory genius. He can tell you exactly what chord is being played the second that he hears it. He is what I aspire to be when I break down songs. So go check out Rick Beato, B-E-A-T-O, on YouTube. But anyway, I have been binging a lot of his videos as of late, and I came across one that I surprisingly missed up until just a few days ago. And it was actually on his second channel, which I didn't even know existed until it came up in my feed. And this was an interview that he did a year, maybe 2 years ago. And he's done a lot of interviews with musicians and artists over the years. He sat down with Sting. I need to watch that one. But this interview, he had a conversation with the one, the only, Dr. Brian May. And I was elated that this happened. And the whole reason Rick had done that interview with Brian was because he was covering and breaking down Bohemian Rhapsody. And he wanted more. He wanted to get straight from the horse's mouth. Why was this done this way? How did you do this? And the greatest thing was, Rick was asking all these questions that no one ever asks when people talk to anyone about Bohemian Rhapsody. And the reason you can ask Brian these questions is because Brian was privy to all those little details that no one else would be. But still, the questions were absolutely amazing. Like, oh, what kind of strings did you use? You know, who's going to ask that question? No one except Rick Beato. Absolutely stellar, this interview. And in this interview, and I listened to the whole thing, it's about an hour long, Brian went on and elaborated about so many things outside of Bohemian Rhapsody. He talked about his approach in general, what they all did, how competitive it always was, the attitudes, the lasting impression of the band. He talked about the Deaky amp. It's a phenomenal interview. And towards the end of it, he started talking about their voices, Brian's, Freddie's, Roger's. He was talking about how they all sound. And this was a gem of a moment in the interview because it was very telling as far as Freddie's approach, especially in the early days, compared to moments in the mid to late 70s and later. Brian specifically said about each of them, these details that when I heard him say this, it was pretty incredible, because some of the things he said, I've thought or said myself about each of them. And one, that's very affirming to know that I'm not wrong. And two, his appreciation for Freddie and Roger as vocalist is so obvious. He said, Roger's a terrifyingly good singer. He has an excellent voice. Those were his exact words. And he said, it was very competitive between them. But they knew, they were aware that when they were together, it was a great, fortunate thing, a natural blend of voices. And he described Freddie's as this incredible razor edge, beautifully silken razor. Roger, very broad, high, top huskiness. And Brian, of course, described himself as in the middle, kind of a warmth. And he could drive it when he wanted to, but he had that rounded sound. But he went on to talk about how Freddie was very self-made and really out of control at first, that his vocals were all over the place. But he was so adamant and devoted to his craft, that perfectionism, he went in again and again to get things right. He was incredibly unforgiving of himself, Brian's exact words, and he'd work himself to death to get it down to the most minute detail. He harnessed the talent to control it, and in Brian's words, became superhuman doing some of those vocals later, when you hear things like You Take My Breath Away. And then, of course, a little bit before that, we have Bohemian Rhapsody with its immaculate, especially the introduction. Remember, all of the vocals in the introduction of Bo Rap are Freddie, despite what you see in the video, with all four of them appearing to sing. Every single harmony, every single line in that intro is Freddie's. So to say that he understood and came to a place where he could manipulate his voice in pretty much any way he wanted is a massive understatement. And the reason I'm telling you this, the reason I'm going into such great detail specifically about this moment in this interview, is because it brought me to a decision about who stole my attention the most on this album, The Works, from 1984. Here's the thing. I have never not known who it was going to be after a certain point, usually about the halfway point. By the time I get to side two and kick it off, I usually know, oh, this guy, it's him. And in some cases, it's even before that, because I know the song so well. In this case, I thought, okay, maybe I'll know by the middle. Okay, I'm at the middle. I still don't know. They're all sounding great. Nothing's jumping out at me. I get to the very end. All the way through. Is this the world we created? I still don't know. And then when I watched this interview and I heard Brian talk about their voices and I heard him talking about Freddie, I thought about everything I noted about Freddie on The Works. The voice, the voice, the voice, the voice, the voice. Piano, yes, but overwhelmingly the voice, the voice. And every single song, whether it was Freddie's composition or not, immaculately performed, the voice. It made it so obvious to me after I went back and had a second listen to the songs and had another moment to think about what I wrote, all of the notes I took about this. And yeah, I gave Hot Space to Freddie, but I have to give The Works to Freddie. Back to back with Hot Space, but given both album styles and expression anyway, more than appropriate. Hot Space was very much a John and Freddie driven sound. And here, Freddie's voice is just incredibly, it's incredible. The growth of Freddie's voice, his ability to take it from soft tenderness to expressive angst, continues to impress. His movements of that classical flair, the beginning of It's a Hard Life. and drama, contrasted with that rockabilly and reflective encouragement. They expand his repertoire, take us to fresh, elaborate destinations, and present a man who thinks and feels about many elements, all the elements in life. And whether Freddie wrote that song or not, he personifies the expression of every Queen's composition effortlessly. The storytelling nostalgia of Roger's Radio Gaga. Frustration and concern in Brian and Roger's Machines or Back to Humans. And John's I Want to Break Free. Sexy rasp in Brian's Tear It Up. His voice pierces, soars, and identifies with every emotion. His own songs take us on a journey full of dynamic expression. Playful Soul on Man on the Prowl. A song some call inferior to Crazy Little Thing Called Love, but also a song I hear as a wonderful companion to a historic number. And Freddie owns the style with no lack of enthusiasm on piano and vocals. It's a Hard Life breaks our hearts in classical Freddie fashion, darling. And Keep Passing the Open Windows revives us with touching melodies and a vocal performance that's so dynamic and impressive, it's one of my favorites. Time and time again, Freddie's performance reminds us of his own penchant for full life and devoted love and reflective realization. My favorite Freddie moment on this album, probably It's a Hard Life, or maybe Keep Passing the Open Windows. Keep Passing the Open Windows is such a unique number, I think, because of Freddie's approach, thinking about it from a soundtrack perspective. So it just feels different. It hits differently. And I noticed that. Plus, it is the first Queen song I ever remember hearing. So naturally, I'm inclined to really appreciate and love it. So it's Freddie. It's Freddie, lovies. It is Freddie indeed on the works. And I'm so happy. There was a moment where I thought I might have to give it to all four of them. But I made a deal with myself that when I started doing this, it always had to be one and maybe honorable mention for another. I think I've done that once or twice. But I never want to give it to everyone. There's got to be one that I choose. It's part of the fun. And there are albums that we haven't even talked about yet. I already know who's getting those because I know them so well, and I already know this is the man. I love his performance here. Let's do it. But in this case, this was this one anomaly. I simply had no idea who was going to get it. And I'm so glad I stumbled upon that interview. I may not have come to the same conclusion if I hadn't heard that interview with Brian and Rick. So thank you, Rick, for interviewing my favorite writer in Queen, Brian May. But as I've revealed my favorite for who stole my attention the most, in full reflection, after I had a moment to assess and reassess, I always like to close out some final thoughts on the album. And this one was interesting. I was, you may remember, uncharacteristically harsh on the works when I opened it. In my mind, it was the first time Queen took a step backward. They've always innovated. They've always pushed themselves because they quote unquote get bored before anyone else. So just when everybody thought they had them pegged, they would turn on their heel and go that direction instead. Usually that was very productive. Usually it resulted in amazing applause and enthusiasm, but that didn't happen with Hot Space in 1982. And the boys recognized that. Every single one of them, in their own way, expressed a bit of a loss with it after the fact because they realized that that's not what the fans wanted, even though they had some fun, kicked it with some numbers, tried some different things. So with the works, they did an about face. They went back to something that was comfortable. They admitted they played it safe. And to me, simply knowing that they were reverting back to something that was more rock and roll, a little bit less adventurous. And they also admitted that it wasn't as edgy or bold or unique. For me, that was a huge shift. And I thought, I even used the phrase selling out, which I realize is extremely harsh. But that's a bit what it felt like when I looked at the whole picture. And then I started listening to the songs again, which of course I've heard a million times, but I started listening to them in detail, breaking them down, measure by measure, phrase by phrase, melody, harmony. And what we have here, even if it's a little bit safe, even if it's a little bit of an echo of what we've heard previously, we have a growth in maturity and humility. Maturity and humility. The guys are older here, goes without saying. Their perspectives on the world at large, technology, love, life, are, I think, bigger and more grounded than we've had in the past. And yeah, a little bit of humility thrown in there. It's not quite so pomp. This is not like jazz from 1978. There was so much thrown around about that being a fascist album. This is not like that at all. This feels, in its demeanor, a little bit more reserved, even though we have some bangers. We've got Tear It Up. Radio Gaga is, I think I called it, one of their most atmospheric synth-driven songs ever. And that hits pretty loud and energetic too. So it's not all entirely reserved or unadventurous. Maturity and humility. I took a lot of that away from these songs when I thought about where we came from in retrospect. Ultimately, a freshness and a vibrancy, I think very much thanks to some time apart. Because it had been more than 10 years since they'd come together. And at some point, everybody's going to feel a little burnt out and probably a little done with it. We know that there was more than one occasion where every single one of them said, I'm finished, and they left the studio. And of course, you can't ever leave because Queen is the train that never stops. But they needed that time. I think a lot of press were just dying for them to break up because it would have been this big story. And so they always wrote as if Queen was on the rocks. But you need that moment to breathe. And I think that was really important to coming back and having some spirit and more heart. There's been a little bit of heart missing for maybe an album or two, honestly. And because everybody was on board with this, the resentment of, oh, I wish this was more rock, is gone, and elation for the music is back. I even saw it when I'd watched the interviews the guys gave for the works, when they released it, when they were going to launch the tour. There was a kind of enthusiasm and a youthfulness in their energy that I hadn't seen in a few years. It was very different than when they interviewed for even all the way back to News of the World. Suddenly, there was a vibrancy there. As if they knew what they were going to give to the masses was going to be celebrated. That confidence in their vibe was there. And as I began diving into this album, I felt a revived renewal and that I was unfair about Queen playing it safe because they know what they're doing. I read a great quote from Freddie, and I wish I could remember where I heard him say this. He was talking about going through this thing for 10 years or more. Albums, promotions, touring around the world over and over and over together. You have to take a step back like a painter. When you're working it, you're in the middle of the mess. You have to take a step back, look at the whole picture. And I don't know if he said it exactly like that, but that's what he was communicating. And it immediately made me think of all things, the quote from Clueless, where Alicia Silverstone, as Cher, says to Ty, she's a full-on Monet. And Ty goes, what's a Monet? And Cher goes, from far away, it's okay, but up close, it's a big old mess. And I thought, that's exactly what Freddie's saying. You have to pull out of the mess. You have to look at the whole picture. You have to look at everything. You have to step back and let it breathe and maybe admire it a little bit and realize how far you've come and what you've done together. Because when you're stuck in the mess, that's all you see is the mess and you're in each other's faces. You don't have time to sit back and see the brilliance. And when you do that, you have that energy creep back in on you and suddenly you're ready to dive in and enjoy once again. And I think that's what's happened on The Works. So even if the sound is not as innovating, it's not as interesting or as unique, we feel a bit like we've heard it before. The energy of the boys on The Works, the intention, the enthusiasm is what gets me here. To a certain extent, I don't entirely disagree with my comments before I went into this album, but I do think I was too hard on it. I never disliked The Works. And when I bought The Works and Queen 2 at the same time, and those were the only albums I owned from Queen, and I was listening to them all the time, at first, The Works was the one that had my vote because it was more accessible. It was more radio ready, literally. It was more pop. As a long time lover of pop and dance and trance and atmospheric things, it spoke to me. It was easier to swallow. And then all of a sudden, somewhere when I was running on the dreaded treadmill, Queen 2 blew me away. But The Works has this charm and this appeal. I think because it is so dynamic, a lot of people slammed it, thinking it was too disjointed. But I think because of that dynamic sound, all of these different genres, it showcases their talent incredibly well because of that. And it gives us these performances that are immaculate. Because at this point, the boys are dialed in. Nobody's going to come in and tell them, oh, this is how you're going to make things better. They could suggest things, and the guys often took those suggestions. But at this point, they know how to rock it. That's why they wrote a song, We Will Rock You. Yeah, the intent of that song was to get people involved and work with the audience, join them in. But it was also a statement. We will rock you. It's exactly why they always joked, we can't put we will rock you at the end of a set because we've already rocked them. So what did they do? They ended up doing a fast version of We Will Rock You to kick off the set. And then they closed, at least partially closed, with the version everybody knew and loved from the album. Stomp, stomp, clap. The Works, we are done. And it's not long now until I kick off Queen's 12th. Can you believe it? 12th album. And in doing so, we will head into the second half of the 80s. And there's a few new things. There's some groundbreaking stuff happening with that album. But I think before I kick it off, because I'll be honest, I have done no research for it, I might do something really special, Queen related, on my podcast. I was debating, and I think I'm going to do it. It's important. We're done with The Works. It feels like the end of another era. And in a way, it's the end of a big era, because the production's going to change with the next album. It doesn't feel so nostalgic anymore. It feels more relatable in as far as technology goes, which feels strange. We're talking about Queen. We're talking about a band that got together in the really early 70s. And a few of them knew each other before the 70s. So this just feels weird coming to the second half of the 80s. But that's it, guys. That's all I got. Freddie, it took the works. Do you agree with me? Do you think he is the best? Not the best. I shouldn't say that. Do you think he steals your attention the most when you're listening to these songs from start to finish? Which performance do you gravitate toward? Is it the drums? Is it Brian on that fabulous Red Special of his? I still can't believe he made part of that thing out of a fireplace. Incredible. All right, you guys, that's it. Keep yourselves alive. I'll be back next time, maybe with something different than Queen, actually. This might be a good time. I've closed an album. Talk about something different. Talk some Queen that's still Queen, but a different kind of a Queen thing. And then we'll kick off album 12. How's that sound? I got it all figured out. Not everything. Far from it. I am such a mess. But at least my podcast is good. And I can live with that. All right, guys, stay happy, stay healthy. And I'll be back next time.